Welcome into the Call of the Podcast, recording on Saturday, June 8th at around 12:30. We are a day before Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. As always, we're powered by CLNS Media. You can check them out on clnsmedia.com. Happy Saturday, Lebowitz.
Yeah, how's it going? How are you?
I'm good. I got to sleep in today for the first time in a while, which I know, you know, doesn't mean a lot to you. Or, you know, 2 weeks for me is not that bad compared to what you do. But I feel rested and ready to go, especially after how draining that game was on Thursday night, that Stanley Cup game.
Yeah, that was brutal. I mean, everyone's obviously pointing to that Noel Chari non-call on the tripping that should have been called. I don't know. For me, that was a two-goal swing right there.
Yeah.
They were playing their best hockey at that point. I think a goal during that power play was inevitable. You have a 1-1 game instead of 2-0. And who knows if DeBrus scores, changes the complexion of that game 100%. Very frustrating, especially when it comes late in the third period like that. You can deal with the tired Fridays or the tired next day, whatever day it is, if there's a win that comes the prior night. But that obviously wasn't the case, and it makes it much more difficult to wake up in the morning.
And I mean, look, you know me, I hate bitching about the officials. I really will be the first one to say that a game's not decided by officiating. Even in instances with Boston sports, when people have been up in arms over officials, I've generally stayed away from that. This one's absurd. It's grotesque. And we'll get into the actual game in a minute, but we just got to work through all this because, you know, you had that trip, the possible slew foot, knee, whatever. It could have been like three different penalties. Maybe all three of them canceled each other out. Maybe there's some NHL rule we don't know about that if you commit two penalties simultaneously, they cancel each other out and you don't get called. But there were others. The elbow from, who is it, on Johansson got suspended. Sundqvist, right?
Yeah, I believe it's Sundqvist.
I mean, that didn't get called, and it garnered a suspension. To me, that's almost more egregious because you're going to suspend the guy for something that at the time was not a penalty. So, I mean, that one's pretty bad. You had the non-call with Tory Krug getting held.
That was so blatant.
Right, probably should have. That's probably if David Krejci doesn't make what was an outstanding play. If David Krejci doesn't make that save, I think that's the play we're talking about, honestly, more than the trip on Achari, because that's where the game would have ended right there. So, David Krejci building the NHL out there, but you had those that were questionable. They took away a Bruins goal that was absolutely a goal. You could see clear as hell on the replay that there was white in between the puck and the goal line. I think that was in the second period. I don't remember who shot it. You know what I'm talking about?
I remember what you're talking about.
As long as I'm describing enough about the play for people to know. I mean, it was just atrocious. And the NHL, unlike all the, and the NHL does some great, great things. They really do. I do think they're one of the better professional leagues out there. The one thing I have a problem with is every time a coach postgame calls out officiating or players call out officiating, or, you know, they have a clip go viral of a bad call, they bend the knee to it and they will go the other way. That's why games 4 and 5 are the way they are, because what is it, Burbley? I can't fucking pronounce that dipshit's name. I just went off the rails. I'm sorry. What is it?
The head coach for the Blues?
Yeah.
Berube, I think?
Berube. It always gets caught in my throat because it's a dumb name for a dumb fucking guy. I'm going to stop now. He makes the comments after game 3, then all of a sudden games 4 and 5 go to the Blues. It's not the first time we've seen something like that in the NHL. The NHL will bend the knee to these coaches. So I am glad, I am happy that Bruce Cassidy, and it's not the kind of guy he is, and I know he probably had to swallow his pride and go do this, but it's the right thing to do for his team, after game 5 came out and said the officiating was horse crap. I am glad he did that, because the Bruins' only hope in game 6 is that they get some of that magic, that love that the Blues got in games 4 and 5, and I think Cassidy's comments could make that happen. And by the way, that poo head behind the bench for the Blues coming out after game 5 and saying, I'm not here to criticize the officials.
Oh my God.
Well, I guess that's because he got it all out of his system after game 3. Look, it's gamesmanship, but what a pud. What an absolute pud that guy is.
Well, I think I think he knows what he's doing when he says that. He understands that they got away with murder on that play and they won a game essentially because of that non-call, led directly to a goal. Should have been whistleblown, power play, tied game essentially. And that wasn't the case. I did enjoy Bruce Cassidy saying what he said. I think he said in a pretty eloquent way He wasn't too emotional about it. He was pretty matter of fact, and his assessment of what had happened was spot on. I tend to agree with you in the sense that there is this overcompensation after the head coach calls out the officiating, which is a massive flaw, but I doubt we see anything like that in game six. At least I hope we don't.
You don't think we're going to see it the other way? You don't think,
maybe there'll be a payback call. Who knows? But that team plays pretty hard. The Blues, that is, and they're scrappy and they do commit a lot of penalties. So I'd say that Berube was being, you know, with him bitching and moaning was a bad look from the start, but it paid off. So, I mean, who's laughing now? And I also hate this idea that, well, the Bruins should put more goals in that. Like, no, they played, the effort that they gave was enough to win that game.
I don't know about that.
Well, it was enough to at least send that game to overtime because it's a two goal swing. Again, it's a two goal swing.
Fair enough.
I don't think that game's not ending in regulation. Obviously, we don't know what would have transpired after that no call, but that game's not ending in regulation if that call's made. That's just my opinion.
I will say this though, and it's now time to move past the penalties and talk about the game and the series as a whole.
Yeah.
You mentioned the physicality. The Bruins are at this point because in every series they've played, they've been the more physical team. They've been the physically dominant team. And it's won them games. Now, all of a sudden, they get to the Cup Final where they are the more talented team, but they're trying to play finesse hockey, and the Blues are just beating the crap out of them. Honestly, it's like 2011 with the roles reversed, with the Bruins playing the role of the Vancouver Canucks, just coming in and getting their heads taken off. And you can tell they're sick of getting hit. They need to be the aggressor if they want a chance to win this game. They need to be the aggressor first on defense and play more physically. They can't get that puck out of the zone. And look, the first line certainly had their problems. They absolutely have. But I think part of that is it all starts on the defensive end. The Bruins can't clear the puck out of the zone. The Blues are getting these 2 to 3 minute zone times, consecutive zone times down in their offensive end. Yeah. And by the time the Bruins clear the puck and Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak are ready for their offensive rush, they have to sub out because they're too tired. The Bruins finally clear the puck. They have to dump it down, and then the Blues get another rush. The Bruins have been playing on their heels this whole series, whereas what got them to this point in the regular season and the playoffs is clearing the puck quickly and establishing breakouts for that first line, getting Marchand, Bergeron on Pastrnak and 3-on-2s or 2-on-1s. That's what they need to start doing. They need to play more aggressive, get the puck out of the zone quickly, and establish those breakouts because outside of one that they absolutely butchered in game five, it was Krejci and I think Johansson were the two. How many true breakout chances have the Bruins had in this series? I can't think of any.
Not nearly enough. And it's kind of this weird thing where they put 39 shots on goal in game five, but it seemed like the scoring chances they had weren't quite good enough.
I would say very few of any quality chances.
Exactly. So
the DeBrusk goal, I didn't think that was a great look.
No, it was. I mean, it was, you know, I don't think Binnington was that great. I think he was exceptional in the first period. I think the second and third period, he took a step back and they could have taken advantage of that. And then the reality is when you have Zdeno Chara coming out to that huge ovation, the emotions are kind of flowing for the Bees. They were dominating in that first period. They just couldn't capitalize. The fact that the Blues lasted that out and they went to intermission scoreless, that's what essentially won them the game.
That shifted the whole game. That could end up being the series. Them winning that first period could be the difference in the series.
But my main point is Binnington, he's good. He had that great first period. He's not that great overall. He's not a guy who's, you know, this exceptional goalie. I'd say Tuukka has outplayed him straight up. He's been challenged a lot more, and he's outplayed him this series. You got to be more aggressive. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the 3 days rest is going to be huge for the Bees. I think Matt Grizzly coming back, which he should be back by game six. You just had it, but you also had a Zdeno Chara with his mouth wired shut, and you just have an older team. So I do think it makes a difference. And I understand we've had these 3 day rests before, and it's something I've talked about before and hasn't really done them all that well in the past, but simply because you get Grizzlick back, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to settle with, you know, more out there with the defenseman or Clifton or Camp or whatever it is. It's a big addition. And I think we'll see them kind of respond on Sunday.
And it'll be interesting to see if they go seven defensemen again, because I like that idea going into the game. I'm not going to criticize them for doing that, especially given the state Char was in, but he can play a full game. There's no need to do that in game six. They were missing that extra forward. And again, talking about the physical presence, specifically that forward being David Backus, that guy who's going to establish that physical presence, they missed having him out there on the ice in game six.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they've been out-muscled. That's the reality of the situation. They've been out-muscled, and they've got some help from the officiating, who's enabled the Blues into playing this type of style. But they're also getting outplayed. At the end of the day, they're just getting outplayed, and they obviously need to step it up.
But here's the thing for me going into Game 6 and then hypothetically into Game 7 too, is that if you're the Bruins, let's be realists here. Let's put all the cards on the table. You know you're probably going to have some leeway with the officials, at least to start. At least, like, test it. And the Bruins got to come at they have to go back to the team that beat Toronto, that team that just beat their opponent physically into submission. It's the same thing they did to Carolina. Carolina was sick of getting hit. All of a sudden, the Bruins get to the Cup Finals. They don't want to hit. They don't want to get hit. They got to embrace that again. And like I said, I think there's going to be some leeway from the officials. Take advantage of that. And I know, you shouldn't want people getting hurt. That's not what sports is about. You're a bad fan. I'm not saying I want anybody to get hurt. Okay. I'm not saying I want them to take any cheap shots. All I'm saying is the line is very different in every game, no matter what the sport is. Every official calls games differently. There's a different line set for every game. The Bruins need to find that line. They need to find it quickly, and they need to be right up against that line the entire game. That's what I'm looking for. Finish checks, finish hits, make them pay. Have their heads on a swivel every time they touch the puck. Have them looking for where that next hit is coming from. Because guess what? That's what the Blues have done to you through five games, and they're 60 minutes away from a cup. The Bruins have to somehow turn that around going into game six. And I think Backus in the lineup is part of it. I think now Chara, having played a game, and he was out there hitting in game five, but I think now he's a game under his belt. He's going to be more comfortable. He's got a hit. And guess what? The first line's got a hit. Those guys have not played with a physical edge all series, and they really haven't had to all year. But now's the time to step up and do that. Give it to them when they least expect it.
Absolutely. I think half the problem here for the Bruins, though, is again, that top line. We've been talking about it so much. Even you can go down to David Krejci, who was kind of MIA in game six or game five. Brad Marchand, I think it's clear he's dealing with something. Bergeron, that's been speculated.
He's dealing with not shooting the puck.
Which is a problem. I mean, you don't think it's injury-based at all? You don't think I think everyone's banged up. I think
if you're injured, it's more incentive to get rid of the puck quicker because you don't want to get hit. He's holding it and trying all these fancy. No, I just think he's being too unselfish.
Maybe. And they are making one too many passes consistently. That's been a huge problem.
He's normally at the middle of that. He's normally the one that's at the center of the too many passes train.
So again, we need to see that top line score. 5-on-5 hockey. They need to score. We saw a 5-on-5 goal from DeBrusk yesterday or 2 days ago. Which was nice for a change of pace. Yeah. But we need to get production out of that top line. You can be as physical as you want, maybe get that team on their toes a little bit. But if you're not capitalizing, you're not scoring on one of 39 or at least getting better opportunities, then, I mean, it's all for nothing, essentially. So I'm still skeptical to see what they can do. I think they will come out with energy. We have seen them respond after losses in the past. Hopefully they can do that. And again, I think Grizzly being back is huge. But it comes down to just being aggressive. That's the key word, aggressive.
All right, they've been down 3-2 before in the Cup Finals. They pulled it off. What do you think?
I don't know. This is a different feel. This is really a different feel. I think they're being outplayed right now by the Blues. They look like they don't have as much energy on the ice as the Blues do. My gut tells me they're probably going to lose Game 6. If they do win game six, though, I think obviously it changes momentum and they win the series. It really comes down to this. I know this cliche and it's kind of a cop out. So I'll say my gut. I'll go with my gut. I think the Blues are winning game six.
That's fine. I feel the exact same way. I think that if the Blues score first in game six, it's over. They're just going to put their tail between their legs and get to the golf course. But if they do somehow score first in game six and they can take that building in that goaltender out of it, which we've seen that this year in this series. When the Bruins score first, right, Binnington kind of struggles. He's great with a lead. He's not great from behind. The question is getting that lead on him and forcing him into those pressure situations. If the Bruins can somehow score first, I'm going to feel really good about it. And yeah, they're not. They better not lose a game seven in Boston. I can't imagine they lose a game. That building is going to be through the roof. Game seven. I really think first goal of game six wins the series. That's what I think. And I think it's going to be the Blues, which is tough. But if the Bruins don't let the Bruins get hot. That's all I'll say. Don't let them suddenly find it. Look, I think they're going to have the benefit of the officiating. I think they got 3 days to stew and be pissed off about every which way game five ended, from the officiating to their lack of effort to not picking up the bag for their captain who came out and played with Zdeno with a broken jaw, and not being able to back him up for that. I think that they've just been sitting pissed off, angry, upset for 3 days. And that can mean a lot, especially in this sport. So we'll see. But I think it comes down to the first goal. And if that first goal is the Blues, it's been a fun season. So,
I mean, we just saw them come out hot game five and the Blues in the game because they got stifled by that great goaltender.
Right.
At least
they
for that one
they
period.
They can't just come out hot. They got to score.
They got to score.
Winning the first period, if it's nothing is not a win.
They also got I'm not the foremost hockey expert, but I feel like there's been a lot of rebounds that have just been out there in front of the net.
The defense hasn't played great. The defense hasn't helped Tuukka Rask out too much.
No, I'm talking about Bennington. When you put shots on net on him, I feel like there's been plenty of opportunities to crash the net and you know, capitalize on you know, Bennington being out of position.
It's got to be dirty goals. If he's hot, you got to score dirty goals because you're exactly. not clean. So all right, those are our predictions. Let's do final thoughts. Leb, let's go for it.
I forget which one I was going to do. I'll do, we discussed this before the show. I'll go Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving. It's looking like things are heating up between him and the Nets in regard to free agent talk. Obviously, I think July is when that stuff really starts to go. And at least that's when you can officially sign. Obviously in the NBA, you have verbal commitments prior to that. People were kind of set on him going to the Knicks. The Nets were kind of a team that people could see him going to simply because of where it's located in Brooklyn. And the Lakers were another squad that people thought maybe he can rejoin forces with LeBron. I think he will end up going to the Nets. It's what it's looking like more and more. I think there's less media pressure for him. I don't know if it's a good fit, though. I think you have a guy in D'Angelo Russell who's a lot less of a headache. Not nearly the same talent as Kyrie Irving, as we saw in the postseason, but still a guy who is good enough to be your number two or three. You can bring in Kyrie all you want, but he's not a number one. So what's your plan beyond that? As a Celtics fan, I'm happy. I'm happy he's staying close, that the Seas will be able to play the Nets and play Kyrie a decent amount at the Garden, and he'll be able to you know, face the crowd and get booed plenty, which he deserves. And I'm just glad he's off their hands. I think it's a win that he's not going to be a Celtic. There's a lot of people like, oh, you should want him. He's a great player. I don't want him. I don't want him at all. I think he's an a-hole, excuse me. I don't think he can win as your best guy. And he's I can't root for him. I can't root for him personality wise. I think he's a bum. So that's my little spiel on Kyrie.
No, that's fine. Look, I'll acknowledge they're probably a worse team without him, you know, just on a game-to-game basis. But it's gotten to the point where you're right. As a fan, after the who cares comment, I said, I don't remember what I said. I don't care if this team is bad. I can't root for this guy. I can't willingly root for him. Get him off of my basketball team. And it sounds like that's what's going to happen. We'll see what happens with Durant. They're saying if Golden State loses, he'll stay. If they win, he'll leave. I think he's gone either way. I think it's him and Kyrie in Brooklyn. And look, all the credit in the world to Danny Ainge. I think he has made every right move in the last 5 years. I really do. I think he absolutely killed it. But the Nets are going to steal Kyrie Irving and the Celtics' title chances away from Boston 5 years after that trade that was supposed to guarantee the Celtics a title. And Jason Tatum is clearly damaged goods. And by the way, he's openly rooting for the Blues. He can get out of here, too. Jaylen Brown.
I think that's fair, by the way. I think he's from St. Louis.
No, but like, and this was the problem with the team the whole year. They don't get what it means to play in this city. They don't get that this isn't just another NBA franchise, right? That's the whole point of being here. And they never truly embrace that. And that's where their issues came from. They thought they were above the Boston Celtics. That was the whole thing with the big three, Garnett, Pierce, and Allen. They all understood. None of them were above what it meant to win a title as a Boston Celtic. And this group never got that. look, I'm exaggerating a little bit on Tatum with he can get out of here, but I do think there is a tie between, you know, look, if he wants to root for the Blues, fine. He doesn't have to be so outward about it because that's not what we're about in this city. But anyway, you got Tatum, Kobe ruined him. You got Jaylen Brown working out with Carmelo Anthony and him and Terry Rozier filming something during the playoffs, mind you, for The Bachelorette. Good to know their heads were screwed on right. Blow it all up. And again, Danny did everything right, except maybe hired the wrong coach. Although I don't know that he had a better option. At the time, it was the right hire. Danny did everything right. And these bums, from Stevens to Kyrie to Rozier, all of them combined with an ankle injury, I will be fair, there was some bad luck in there, just let him down every step of the way. Yeah. I feel so bad for Danny Ainge because he built what should have been a powerhouse. And now 5 years in, it's just getting blown up.
And I honestly, I mean, the more I think about it, the more I just, I weep for our generation that's in the NBA currently, our age group. Brad Stevens is a phenomenal basketball mind. He's a great coach. If you're
now, see, those are two different things.
What matters though? What matters though? Do you want a guy who is a motivator or someone who or do you want to be able to motivate yourself to an extent? Number one, and number two, do you want a guy who's great at drawing up the inbound plays, who knows where to put everybody, who knows, you know, how to get the rotations in order? Not that he did a great job of that this year.
Depends on your roster.
It didn't come.
His team needed a drill sergeant.
But it didn't. Yeah, I guess they did. But that speaks to the flawed personalities of these players, of the leaders.
There are coaches who can win in that situation. Look at Doc Rivers.
Do you don't think this was an extreme version of one of those teams, though? Because I don't like the pair. There's no parallel between this team and the 08 team. I don't think there's one.
No, they're exact opposites.
They're opposites.
Exact opposites.
Exactly. So I don't know of a team that would win with the personality types of this one, barring one that had LeBron James.
They were exact opposites going in. They're exact opposites now. They weren't necessarily exact opposites going in.
That's probably because we didn't have a good read.
Kind of what we're talking now is nature versus nurture. I don't know that what happened with the Celtics was totally nature. I don't know that this was the destined outcome for this team. I think a couple different personnel decisions. And again, Danny did I truly believe Danny did everything. All the moves were correct at the time he made them, outside of maybe signing Gordon Hayward. But he did that for Brad Stevens to keep Brad Stevens happy.
He didn't have a broken leg at that point.
Right. No, and again, the ankle is part of this. But I don't know that the Celtics were destined for this. I don't.
Well, you'd hope not. I just think that it comes down to the players.
I think it comes down to players and mismanagement to those players by Brad Stevens. It comes down to Brad Stevens not having enough say and Kyrie Irving having too much say in the locker room. And that it didn't have to be that way. It didn't. But it got that way.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm glad. Look. Best of luck to him in Brooklyn. I hope he wins 30 games next year. That's just kind of where I'm at. And if the Celtics starting point guard next year is Brad Wanamaker or whoever the best point guard is on the board at 18, fine. Oh, yeah, you're right. It's going to be Marcus Smart. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. Because I don't want Terry Rozier back either. I really don't.
Oh, no, Terry Rozier made it back. He's gone. He's 100% gone.
But now he's supposedly, if Kyrie leaves, he's like a sure thing to come back, supposedly.
And that's I just don't understand. Like, stop enabling these people. The NBA, these players have far too much power, and it creates for a crappy league, horrible dynamics on each of these teams, and these fan bases that end up disappointed because the talent that they had couldn't overcome the flawed personalities that the team had. It really is infuriating to watch. This was the worst season I've ever watched. This was worse than 2011 Red Sox. This is way worse than that because you had these athletes saying the wrong thing consistently. You had higher expectations, you could argue.
This team blew right by the 2011 and the 2017 Red Sox.
100%. This was brutal. And Kyrie Irving, again, I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it 1,000 more. Most disappointing athlete ever to play in Boston. By
at least
a
in our
mile.
Lifetimes. I mean, there might have been somebody in 1910 who sucked.
I don't think so. I think he's worse. He's worse than all of us.
Anybody in 1910. You can say that definitively.
Absolutely brutal.
You had to think about it.
I'll think about it. Maybe there was some guy like Satchel Homefield or something.
That's so crazy. Dickshot Johnson.
Yeah.
That was a real pitcher, by the way, named Dickshot Johnson.
Dickshot Johnson.
Yeah.
Is that where he bean players?
No, fastball right down the middle can also be called a dick shot.
Oh, okay. So that's a good one.
I think that's where that came from because he wasn't good at all. So, although I think he's like the 50s. I forget. I heard on Rich Eisen's podcast, they did a thing with him. Not with him, he's dead, but like talking about him. If there was some like total a-hole player in the 1910s and 1920s in Boston, we know Ty Cobb, whatever, that we're missing. You know, if we have any beyond octogenarian at this point, whatever it is, whatever the term is, that listen to this podcast and you're on Twitter, which holy hell, good for you. Tweeted at us at Call the Podcast. You can check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Actually, before we end the NBA talk, super quick, because we are running a little long here, Lebowitz. Raptors close it out in five?
I hope so. I think it depends on KD's status. Will he be back? Will Clay be a little bit more healthy? I don't know. I'm not going to count on Golden State just yet. It could go either way. There is a team that could come back from a 3-1 deficit. We've seen in the finals before with the Cavaliers. I think the Golden State Warriors can do it as well. They did in the conference finals, the Western Conference Finals against the Thunder back in KD's last season. Although now that KD is on the Warriors, maybe that's going to negate any effort being made towards that. So I don't know. We'll see. I think I love the fact that Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors are winning this thing. It's great to watch. I'm rooting for them to win. I hate the Warriors. I'm still not willing to say it's theirs for the taking.
No, I agree with you. This series reeks of a blue 3-1 lead, especially if KD comes back. I think the Warriors have been going about 60-70% so far. We'll see if they can crank it up another notch. Right, that'll do it for us for this week or for this episode. We will be back. When would Game 7 be, if there is one?
Wednesday night. Yeah.
Okay, we
maybe Tuesday we can do one. Maybe Monday or Tuesday.
Spinners start this week. By the way, lowellspinners.com. Get your tickets. Home opener Friday night. Come have some fun. Maybe Monday or Tuesday night, potentially. There'll be an episode post Game 6. It might be the final Bruins episode. It might not. We will see. And then, of course, we will get into the Boston Red Sox because that will be all we have left to talk about. And hopefully, they give us a decent summer of a sport to watch. Big series this weekend, Lebowitz. Big series with the Tampa Bay Rays in town for four. They blew the first game. Let's see if they can get 3 in a row. That would be huge. All right. Follow us on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been the Calling the Podcast. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next time.